There's no question that budgets are going to get tighter, and we're all scrambling to try to figure out how to do what we can do best, which is identify the priorities, match the talent to the priorities, and then try to figure out how to manage the risk. And let's be honest, the risk is that we're not going to have enough money to train people. We're not going to have enough money to travel them to where we need them to be, because generally speaking, salaries, training, and travel are all in the same line for many of us, and we're going to have to make those trade-offs. There has to be a balance, and we have to look for better ways to train. HR University is one example of those. The HR community is out in front. Pool your resources, pool your capability, start to build better programs. We're also going to have to face the fact that we need more mobility in government. We can't go building every single specialty we need. We need to start moving people in and out of agencies to where we need them, when we need them. We need to be much more flexible. And frankly, I think the workforce is going to demand that. When you look at the generation that's coming online, they really are already online. They operate in a virtual environment. They want to move. They want to see things in a different fashion than, let's say, I did 35 years ago when I first started. You know, I put down roots, stay in the same place. That's not the world we live in today. And so we really need to focus on making that change. Budget pressures will force us to do that. And I think the president is looking for us to be creative and to step up in ways that let us have more flexibility for the employee, but at the same time, frankly, accomplish more. And technology does that for us. So I think we have to look at how we balance traditional ways of learning with technology, traditional ways of working with more flexibility in location and in method.
How do you balance that, and how do you prioritize, especially as a human capital professional?
It really comes down to making decisions based on where you see the risk. So when I do that here in the Department of Energy with Secretary Chu, what we really look at is where does the Secretary believe we need to advance the state of the art in technology or in science research the most? And then from that, how do we back off and say, how do I change that mix? Can I do that by bringing people in from other programs? Do I do it in partnership with the private industry? Do I do it by putting together teams that don't stay together? People who come together to accomplish a certain goal and then go back to where they came from. We've been doing that here. It's been highly successful for us, and that may be where we're headed, into more focused, specific teams that work on a project and then disperse and take that talent back to the agency that they came from or take it back to the industry that they came from.
Let's talk about the GEAR pilots that the Department of Energy is participating in. This is falling into the whole training idea you talked about, mm-hmm. something that you want to preserve as budgets are cut.
GEAR really says, let's line up what we're valuing in performance with what our expectations of the employees are, and then how we're actually measuring and reinforcing whether leadership is valuing those things. That's really what GEAR is doing. So here at the department, there's a tremendous focus on looking at the senior executive leadership core and the program team leaders to say, it is your responsibility not just to meet milestones, but to prepare people to meet those milestones, to manage people, to spend more time communicating with people than just tracking and driving and pushing performance envelopes. So you deliver better performance, higher quality performance by managers supervising, teaching, facilitating, and collaborating. And that's what we're doing here.
So it sounds like this is more of a hands-on role that you're advocating as opposed to just sitting there and looking at the spreadsheets?
Yes, it's much more intensive. It's saying, look, our job as managers is to talk to people. You're doing well, and here's why. Things are not working well, and here's why. Things are not progressing as we wanted to. What do we do about it? What do you think we ought to do? It's about just talking to employees. When it comes right down to it, we're all used to being coached. It's about coaching nonstop.
Hiring reform, another big item on the president's agenda. Where does the Department of Energy stand on this?
Well, we've got a pretty good record on that. Secretary really took that under, I'd like to say he took it under his wing, but he didn't. He took it as a personal objective to look at hiring and to improve not just the time to hire, but the quality itself. And so every time we would go in and report to him, we're driving the the time to hire down, which we've done. We're, I think, the second largest reduction in the government. We're down to about 83 days now. We were up, I think, about 174 at one point. When you look at that, that's a real accomplishment. The secretary would sit in the room when we said that and say, okay, I'm pleased, but what about the quality? Are we getting more applicants? Are the managers able to see more applicants? And he actually engaged with Director Berry on strategies to make sure that we were widening the pools and that managers were seeing more and more of the resumes. And that's really helped them focus on, what am I asking for? What do I want to hire? So we're not in the business of what I call an announcement mill. We're really down to, what are the critical skills you're looking for? What differentiates this job from the job next to it? And how are you going to make that decision so that the employee who takes that job knows exactly what they're required to do and what they're getting into, and you know what that individual is going to bring to the table.
So how do you know? How do you know you're getting quality folks, even though you've achieved kind of the quantitative measures of hiring time? You're almost at 80 days. So what's the next step?
Well, the next step is, the minute somebody comes in, you start looking at how you're onboarding them. And so do you spend more time talking to them about generalized topics of orienting them, or do they come in already with an understanding of where they are, already with an understanding of where the projects are, and how quick do they get to work? So that's one measure. And you can track that by what happens in the first set of reviews after they report on board. How many times do you adjust their performance appraisal? So that number is low. You know people are getting the right things written down and they don't have to go back and make changes. What does their training look like? It is progressive. It is the IDP, the individual development plan that they have in place. Is it very specific? Does it have set things in it that they stick to, or does it have to be revised? And then most importantly, what's the office climate look like? How many complaints are you getting? How do the employees engage? When you have a meeting with them, and the secretary does this, and he goes in and sits down and visits with them, are they engaging with him? Now, sometimes that's tough, because when you've got a Nobel laureate as a secretary, you know, you want to hear what he has to say. So you've got to get him to say, no, he wants to hear you. So you do a little work to get him going, because once he starts talking, everybody gets quiet. It's like E.F. Hutton. Everybody's, you know, it's the commercial. And that's because he's a natural teacher himself. So one of the ways you judge quality is by, what are people asking? What are they demanding? How are they feeding it back? And that's one of the metrics that we're using, is how satisfied do people appear with the communication. We're finding that people didn't like our communication methods very much. They weren't specific enough. There wasn't enough of it. And the secretary said, wrong answer. Get on it.
The Pathways program, about to start July 10th, not too far from here. You're going to be gone by then. Pathways program designed to bring people into government and get them interested in government from the, you know, student level even. So what are you doing with regards to preparing for the Pathways program?
What it's doing is allowing students to understand the federal hiring process in a more direct and comprehensive way. You know, I may be bullish on the Department of Energy. I'm not. I'd rather see talent join the United States Civil Service. I spent my life in it. It's been a tremendous career. I would recommend it to anybody. I do recommend it to everybody at some point. And I think one of the things Pathways is going to do is demystify that process for high school students looking to get that first entry in as a summer job, for college students looking to get more specific experience and specialize, people who want to go back to school, pursue a degree while they work. Pathways is going to give us the way that they can all see those jobs, that we can all address those jobs in a comprehensive way as a government, not as energy and this agency and that agency, but that we can also use a system that allows us to focus in on areas where we have specific skills. And it's, you know, one of the things in energy is we're after scientists. So how do we brand ourselves? Only here. Only here will you get to work on tomorrow's energy program. Only here will you solve national security problems in engineering, in physics, in the sciences, in business management. Only here can you do that. So it gives us the ability to retain our identity, but it gives us a common pathway or a common highway for students to travel down.
Congressman Moran and Congressman Connolly have introduced a bill aimed at reforming the senior executive service. That's a topic that people have talked about for a while. What is the one thing that you think needs to change to make the senior executive service better?
I think we need to get more mobile. And let me start by defining mobility. I'm not saying mobility means that we need to all pack up and move across the country every 4 to 5 years. But I really think we need to get back to the notion that when the senior executive service was created, it was created to actually solve the problems of government and allow government to move leaders from one department to another to focus on critical skills. If I'm good at HR management and another agency is struggling, then the president ought to be able to say, I want him to move over here and do that work. And I ought to be thinking about doing that. I ought to want to have the broadest exposure possible to the work climates, to the management philosophies of every single public sector agency, not just what I know right here at Energy or what I learned in the Defense Department, because the world is bigger than that. And if I'm more experienced, if I've been exposed to more, I'm going to be a stronger executive. It's just that simple.
As you move forward, what are some of the biggest frustrations that you think you have that haven't been accomplished, not necessarily under your watch, but just in the HR community in general within government, things that need to be worked on?
Well, I think there are several things, and you've seen them. They come up time and time again. One of the things in HR we need to have is a better professionalized community where we are less process intensive and we are more focused on policy and how the policy applies. That's coming. USA Jobs is helping us do that. HR University will helping us do that. But as a professional community, we really need to make a push because we still have a lot of localized practices and forms that they confuse. Frankly, they confuse some of us sometimes, and we need to focus on that. And I think it's coming, but it needs to be omnipresent in our agenda as Chico's.
What are some of the biggest accomplishments of your career?
I think the biggest achievement I've had in government has been the opportunity to be able to pave the path for the next generation of public servants. I think that's a very important thing because it's about the continuation of our government, which is the envy of, I think, a lot of countries. And the reason I say that is because our civil service spans every administration, directly, completely, fully. Not many places can make that claim. Bringing people in to pick up where we left off with the same values, with the same commitment, that's probably the highlight of my career. Before this job, I worked in programs, and that was rewarding. I worked in large-scale facilities. I managed billion-dollar budgets. I spent a lot of time in major system acquisition. I can look to a lot of things. I can watch the president's helicopters fly up and down the Potomac and know that I had a hand in putting integrated communication systems in them. I can look at film clips from the Marines landing in far distant places to defend freedom and know that the H-53 helicopters they come off of, I had a big hand in extending the life of them. I can look at solar power, and I can look at the building improvements we've made in efficiencies and know that I was once part of that program. Those things are all important, but preserving the civil service as we know it, that's probably the highlight.
What's ahead for you? What's ahead for Mike Kane as you move into a new chapter in your life?
I'd like to say that I'm going to retire, but I'm smart enough to know that that'll probably last about 60 days. I'll probably get through the summer, and that's about it. But I think there are some things that I feel undone in my own professional life. What I want to do is be an advocate for civil servants because I believe they're some of the hardest working, most dedicated individuals that we have in this country. And they deserve to be recognized. And so where I can be an advocate, where I can stand up and testify for them, that's what I'm going to spend the next several years doing.
Anything else that we didn't cover that you would like to add?
Just that it's been a tremendous career. It's been a career of substance and a career of meaning, and I urge every single federal employee out there to look back at their own career and recognize the value that they've had on behalf of the American people. And now, as a private citizen, I thank each of you for what you do every day.